Welcome to Health Hats, empowering people as they travel together towards best health. I'm Danny Van Leeuwen, and I have worn many hats in my 40-plus years in healthcare as a patient, caregiver, nurse, informaticist, and leader. Everyone wears many hats, but I wear them all at once. We will listen and learn about what it takes to adjust to life's realities in healthcare's Tower of Babel. Let's make some sense of all of this. Best health includes physical, mental, and spiritual health. This first podcast celebrates Michael Funk as he found his best spiritual health in the last year of his life as he died. It's Thanksgiving. And I'm thankful to have known Mike Funk, my son, our brother, our friend, who died on November 18, 2002, at age 26, of metastatic melanoma. In this session, I'll share some tape of an interview with Mike a few months before he died. We'll hear from Bob Dougherty, who conducted that interview, and some thoughts and stories from me. Mike said that he wasn't born with a tattoo on his ass telling him how long he had to live. What a gift. One day we're sitting at the kitchen table talking about dying and superpowers, and Mike thought that he and I had the same superpower. We both accept what is. Yep, he died young. God, that's life. You open your heart and tragedy just walks right in. What's the alternative? Closed heart? Not for me. So let me set the stage for you. This was July 17, 2002. It was my 50th birthday party. We had the party in Schoharie County, New York. So when you hear some of the audio, you'll hear a lot of noise. I'm able to filter some of it out, but not all of it. So here we are at my 50th birthday party.
But I've been enjoying your dog. I am a cat person, so he always comes in and checks me out. Like,
next you'll hear Bob Dougherty interviewing Michael Funk. I'm sure you'll be able to tell who is who.
Yeah, I'm into just, you know, shoot questions and we'll just wrap.
Right.
And we'll do that.
All right. Why don't I, I'll ask you the same questions I want to ask other people.
Okay.
How did you meet this Jamoke called Danny?
Well, you know, I was going to school with his oldest son, Simon, and one day I just kind of, I don't know how, a mutual friend introduced us and went over to his place, decided that it seemed like a really comfortable environment, a type of environment that I hadn't experienced before. And I just wanted to hang out there. I didn't really know Dan and Ann too well. Like, I guess I met him the first day. But I just kind of, you know, came into the house and didn't leave. And they were okay with that. It was never an issue about, hey, you know, who's this kid? Why is he here all the time? Why is he eating all our food? Because I just started eating all their food right from the start. And they just, you know, made me welcome. Made me feel like it was the first time I'd seen a nuclear family. And I don't mean to say it like this is a traditional nuclear family, because it's not. It's a very amazing and dynamic family. But they're all about just bringing you in and giving you their love and trying to understand you and trying to help you understand yourself. So I didn't. It was an environment I just didn't want to leave. Didn't ever want to leave. And I didn't have to. It made me feel like, here you go.
I remember Mike coming to live with us. He just appeared. Came home with my son, Simon. And he never left. We did go talk with his dad and suggested he come live with us, and his dad was fine with that. And that was that. I can't say it was always easy. He was always good to us, my wife and I. Very polite, very considerate, very loving. But he was a crazy teenager. But he did his homework before he did his crazy stuff, which we really appreciated.
You've had two awful go-rounds with cancer intervention.
Right.
And recently, more bad news. And it's tough thing to take. So you're here.
My thing is, it's not awful and it's not tough.
Okay.
I've had a philosophy of life that life is just kind of, that it happens. And I don't mean to say that I'm passive about it, but that it's going to happen and you got to make a peace with it. And then it's like a letting go, you know? I understand, and sometimes I hate to try and explain it because it sounds simple. It sounds like almost I've developed it by not thinking about it. But tomorrow's going to happen, regardless of what I do. I can be happy about it. I can prepare myself for everything I can prepare myself to be. And those things now are like, you know, I want to be a loving person. I want to be around the people I love. I want to be happy, which isn't necessarily quantifiable. And so I expect these types of things. And I get them. I don't need $50,000 a year. I don't need a college degree. I don't need a car. I don't need these possessions. I've got an amazing family that I can hug. I can hug any member of my family whenever I want. I can tell them I love them whenever I want. This isn't stuff I grew up doing.
I had a strange interaction with Danny about a week ago when we were talking about you and your diagnosis. What I said to Danny is, I look for justice in the world. I want things the way I want them and the way I expect them to be. And he very quickly said to me, well, that's your thing. I don't bother with that. And he went right on. And you seem to be the same kind. You have the same kind of thinking, which is, you're living, you're enjoying, you're not struggling with an idea of what ought to be.
Right.
You got both feet in what is. Did Danny play a part of that, or are you both just two peas in a pod?
I think Danny played a type of part of that. And then, you know, Danny's got the type of personality. If you're going to be really close to him, you have to love yourself to be comfortable around him. And, you know, when you get someone in your life that's really important to you, you want to make sure they're in your life. You want to make sure you keep interacting with them. So if there's part of you, you know, part of me that's uncomfortable being around Danny, I'm going to be unhappy because I'm going to make sure I'm around Danny. So that was a challenge to me to make sure that I knew who I am. You know, I know what I really want to do. I believe in it and I can practice it. Because Danny's going to challenge me. If I'm doing something stupid, you know, I used to drink and party all the time, and Danny would call me on that. You know, it was just not like he would nag me about it, but it was up front. He knew what was going on, and we would talk about it. So I had to know what I was doing and then start to think about whether I was right. So Danny, like, gives you one of those difficult relationships, but the most rewarding type, where I had to end up being happy with myself to really start enjoying Danny and my relationship perfectly. So he pushed me to a certain position in my life where I had to make expectations of myself that were real. You know, not just these, like, secondary, I'm going to entertain myself with these types of things. I'd say that, yeah, you were, like, pushing me to love myself, and that's helped a lot with this.
Oh, man, that just makes me want to cry. Love myself. I remember when Mike was diagnosed with melanoma. We saw this ugly thing on his neck, and I knew it was bad. He had surgery to have it removed, some nodes out, and a year of interferon chemotherapy, and those were really hard years for him. He felt like crap all the time. He was pretty freaked out. We were pretty freaked out. After that, after the chemotherapy and some time passed, and he pulled his life together after that, decided to go to school, went to Geneseo, and met a girl, and he was in love. It was wonderful. Then one day, got a call. I'm numb on my right side. I thought, oh man, this isn't good. And sure enough, he had a brain tumor, which he had surgery. And then he had a lung tumor and he had surgery. And then that just wasn't good. He had more brain tumors. I'm really proud of us as a family. We really pulled together and supported him and supported each other and coordinated his care. And we had weekly phone calls where we would share stories and what's been going on for the week and what are our challenges and what tests are coming up and doctor's appointments and who's going to take them and, you know, how they're feeling.
What kind of thing do you want for him? What kind of birthday wishes do you have for the old guy?
Oh, wow. I don't know. It seems like cop-out. I want what he already has for it. Danny's got... What is he? He has everything. He loves his job. He's well-directed. He loves his family. He's got a great family. And he really... You don't hear him complain. What do you get for somebody like that? What do you wish for someone like that? I wish for Danny today to be Danny tomorrow. And then Danny the day after. He's living like the perfect existence right now. You know, because he's got so many things going well for him. And then he's got some stresses. And he accepts them. He deals with them. And he just keeps being. He's really got it great.
Oh, Mike. I just love you. This morning I reached out to Bob Doherty, gave him a call to get his take on the experience he had interviewing Mike and being part of Mike's illness and death. Bob was my boss, my colleague, and my friend. He did the video of Mike at my 50th birthday party.
What was your experience of Mike and his passing?
As Mike, the diagnosis for Mike became rather clear and dismal, and it was traumatic for everyone concerned, including Mike and his girlfriend. Danny was the caretaker and continued to guide Mike. He had provided him with some basic stabilizing parenting and love in a very inclusive and full way. Mike had moved into his home, took guidance from him, improved his life in very critical ways, moved away from any debilitating behaviors, and he was a very free-spirited, energized guy with a bright mind. And, he always felt great confidence about his thinking and his life. It was marvelous. He was an ideal fellow. But Danny contributed to his functionality very basically, and Ann and his other boys. So it was interesting. Shortly before he died, Danny had a 50th birthday, and I taped and interviewed him on that birthday. And within weeks after his death, I put together a little video, 14-minute video, which the family treasured. I just reviewed it today. I'm now approaching an anniversary of his death. He's dead many years. And I was struck again by his philosophical wisdom for a person of his age in the condition that he was, which is soon to die and clear that was the direction. He was enthusiastic about life. He was hopeful about the moment, appreciative of all around him. He had a view of the world that was sort of an old man's view of value. He didn't mention property, money, didn't even mention sadness. He talked about connection, contribution, appreciation of his life as it is exactly, and his connection with all around him, including his girlfriend. And it was rather startling to hear that again from a person so well philosophically or grasping of life in the way that we would all like to. I think we all struggle with life's meaning and direction. And he had the meaning down, which was appreciating each other without any overarching religious or philosophical commitment that was in any way jarring. He just understood and appreciated his own and other people's lives. So I consider that value, the value of Danny, Van Leeuwen, and Ann, and what they bring to the world and shared. Mike, by the way, was sort of a wayward adolescent when he arrived at Danny's house, and he said, I just liked the environment, so I never left. And it was okay with them. He said, it was like a fairy tale, you know, but here is a young, vibrant, well-thinking, and a bright, bright guy, having gotten to a point in his life of satisfaction. I'm now 74 years old, and I'm getting closer to it, but I'm not quite where he was, which is greatly appreciating it every day. It was wonderful to know him, and it was nice to experience that love is transferable, and very, very special.
So some of the time, I think Mike was just full of life, and some of the times he just felt really miserable, and he wrote a lot of poetry. Believe it or not, we had a lot of laughs. Oh, some funny stuff happened. I remember when we went to buy him a computer at Circuit City, and the young salesperson wanted to sell him a lifetime warranty on the computer, and Mike just kept saying, I don't really want a lifetime warranty. And the guy was young and determined, and Mike finally said, you know, I got brain tumors and I'm going to die in 3 months, and I got no use for a lifetime warranty. Poor guy. Oh, the poor guy was mortified. We were hysterical. You know, I really appreciated that Mike was not the, you know, why me? You know, oh my God, life is so unjust. I've always felt that, you know, why not us? Why not him? Why not me? Why not whatever? I think it helped me, you know, getting a diagnosis of secondary progressive multiple sclerosis. And, you know, Mike and I both won a lottery we didn't buy tickets for.
So your wife, Marianne, died not that long after Mike died. And I'm wondering about, I know they're very different experiences, but, you know, death is death. And I'm wondering about, you know, how, I mean, you were as, for not being a member of my immediate family, you were as involved in the experience of him being sick and dying as anybody. And I wonder, I've always wondered about how or if that may have affected how you experienced Marianne's death.
Well, that's a pretty, I need to think a little more about it, but I think the experiences were identical, and that death is death. It's so stunning and final. Yeah. My wife died from an aneurysm, and it took 18 hours from the beginning of the event to her loss of life. So it was a quick bang, a tremendous instant change. But they were the same in that the ultimate result of grief and loss is an appreciation of what you experienced in being alive and connected to that person. And in summary, it's gratitude. And I have accomplished that with my wife and with Mike. I was able, fortunately, to never personalize the experience. Her death was her death. I didn't wrap myself in cloth and ashes and feel sorry for myself. I was traumatized. I had to learn to live my life in an entirely different way. But somehow I never felt resentful. And I watched Danny go through this process. He reached out for counseling help as Mike was sick and sicker. And I did the same. Within 4 days of her death, I was asking EAP for a referral to grief counseling. And I went to a group setting, grief counseling. And so, but throughout Mike's experience, as heartbreaking as it was, and it was extremely heartbreaking, I never felt Danny shaking his fist at the sky or at the gods or the world, and I didn't either. So there was a commonality there. We both didn't personalize the loss to some injustice. We accepted life as it was going on, and we came very quickly to appreciate the power of the person that we loved. So there was that commonality. I also had an initial feeling when my wife died, how can people just be driving around and shopping? You know, don't they know that the world stopped, you know? And it was, and I felt that with Danny, that I remember one day, shortly before Mike died, Danny was just trying to do the best he could in all areas. And he told me he was sorry about not being as attentive at work as he had been. And we sat, I think we were out in the hall, and there was a bench there. And we sat down. Well, it was in the hospital. And,
yeah,
foyer
I
at
remember
the hospital,
that.
And,
yeah.
And Danny cried. And it was appropriate to cry. And we sat there, and he cried a little. I might have joined him with a little quiet tear. And we were just two men together coping with life as life was taking us. And I remember Mike's funeral. It was a particularly sad event because he was so freaking young and vital. You know, but his contributions to life can be seen on that video. It's remarkable that a young man, particularly a guy with some rejection in his family of origin, managed to accomplish at his young age. So yeah. That's how it was. We were appropriately sad at the moment. We didn't blame the world for a tragic life. We managed the way we best could, and our best was pretty damn good.
Yeah.
I don't think there's much more to be said about it.
I was thinking this morning, I was talking to Anne's my wife, and I was talking to Anne, and I was thinking that, now I have this mission of empowering people as they travel together toward best health. And I realized that health is physical, mental, and spiritual. And that while Mike was dying, he got stronger and stronger spiritually. And that was fascinating, you know, to watch. And really, he got stronger mentally first, because he wasn't so strong mentally before he was sick. But then, I think in his last year, you know, the philosophical, he really got centered. And I think that really, that made a difference for all of us.
I think his accomplishments, philosophically or spiritually, were stunning. They were stunning. And I think it fulfilled both the true course of life as to what's important. But I think from your intellectual Jewish tradition, he was the exemplar, the star, the person who understands and produces within that understanding a communication to the world, to those immediate to him, but the whole world. And I think he represents your life direction, Danny. Just as you and I shared the quality of good services and the rational management. We tried to manage in a way that was human and, full. We didn't ask people to do more than they should have or could have, but we asked them to do the best we could. And that's what Mike did, and that's what you did. From the moment you met him, and with my wife now, my wife was a second wife. We were married about 22 years. I never had any regrets. And your relationship with Mike, as far as I know, had no regrets. Welcoming. It was all on the positive side of human connection and growth.
Oh, man. Yeah. What to say?
Are you crying again? We know how to live, Danny.
Yeah, I wouldn't have given this up for anything. It was wonderful. The whole thing. Was wonderful. Painful, wonderful.
Yes. Life is wonderful. It's got some rough edges, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But for those of us that try to walk the earth and make it a little better, we know how to live.
Well, buddy, thank you so much.
Oh, you're more than welcome.
I love you.
I love you too, my friend.
Mike was a gift. I got to tell you one more story. This is a great story. So, you know, Mike and I talked a lot about dying. And what was it like? You know, was there an afterlife? What would happen? He didn't really think there would be one, but he sure wondered. So one day we're sitting there and I say, Mike, you know, this is totally weird, but if after you die, you could leave me a sign, oh my God, that'd just be fabulous. So it was about, 3 months after he died, probably a little longer. He died in November. This was probably in the spring. And we were doing this work on our front stoop was made, a big block of cement that had tilted. And so my wife was redoing the cement and building it up so that it was level. And I was her cement mixer and she was the stone worker. And when she got done, I cleaned everything up and, you know, washed everything down and took a fresh piece of plastic out of a bag and covered the wet cement so it could cure overnight. And in the morning, I took the plastic off the cement, and there was Mike's guitar pick just sitting on top of the cement. You know, I don't know. What does that mean? What really happened? But it was cool. God, it was cool. I still have that pick. Oh, goodness. All right, Mike. This one's for you. Hey, thanks for joining me. follow me through my website at www.health-hats.com. See you around the block.